Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Welcome to Sports Beat KC, the Kansas City Star Sports Podcast. I'm Blair Kirkhoff. After a busy first week, NFL free agency has calmed down a bit, and that gives us a chance to catch up with Chiefs beat writer Jesse Newell, who will break it all down for us. We project what will happen with cornerback Legarius Sneed, who carries the franchise tag. We speculate about the wide receiver position group now that Hollywood Brown is on the team. And we look at remaining positions of need for the Chiefs as they put together a roster that will attempt to win the franchise's third straight Super Bowl. Free agency continues, and so do we. So let's get started talking Chiefs with Jesse Newell. Been a while since we talked, Jesse. I think we had a show right after the Super Bowl. But we knew then that it wasn't going to be long before we chatted again, because that's a free agency period happens so quickly, and it's so important now for all NFL teams, including the Chiefs. And it's been pretty active for the Chiefs. They didn't make as big a splash as other NFL teams, but they made some splashes, some ripples, and there's probably a little more work to be done, isn't there?
Yeah, and I mean, we say not many splashes, but they actually kind of beat free agency to the punch, and that's the most important thing here. We talked with Brett Veach at the Combine about, you know, the main offseason missions, and Chris Jones getting re-signed was number one. And if you look at any free agent list out there, Chris Jones was the number one free agent available. And the Chiefs locked him up before he was allowed, or before he could get to free agency. So they weren't out there, you know, bidding against 31 other teams. They were able to get him locked up before he was, you know, officially open to the rest of the football world. So even if the Chiefs did nothing else, I mean, if you sign the number one free agent, that's available out there after winning your second straight Super Bowl, you probably are off to a pretty good start. Now, we could talk terms about that and how much risk the Chiefs took, all those sorts of things, but it's probably inaccurate to say that the Chiefs didn't make any ripples when they sort of just beat free agency to the punch, and that's what happened with Chris Jones, and getting him locked up was obviously a big offseason priority.
Yeah, it was huge, and they made him the highest paid defensive lineman, right, of all time, and that remained newsworthy when Aaron Donald announced his retirement earlier this week. So the Chiefs will have the highest paid player at his position in Chris Jones. So there's that. 5-year deal, but for all practical purposes, it's a 3-year contract, right?
Yeah, and highest paid defensive tackle, just to make sure we put that clarification
there. You go.
Because obviously some edge rushers that more, but his number was just above that of Aaron Donald. You know, it's interesting because we talk so much about the Chiefs. They never really they've sort of had the mindset of being open with what they're going to do and always thinking in terms of Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Travis Kelce and then fitting in the rest of the pieces. But this Chris Jones was a concession on their part. I mean, the Chiefs were sort of, it seemed like last year, wanting to get Chris Jones in the $27, $28 million range. He decided to play on the last year of his deal after they reworked his contract and sort of bet on himself. And listen, he won. I mean, to get 3 years, $30 million plus over the course of those 3 years, along with that being guaranteed money, I mean, that's more than the Chiefs were offering. Plus, it's 3 additional years. Whereas last year, if they would have signed him a long-term deal, it might have just been 2 additional years at whatever, $28 million or something. So this is something, and Sam McDowell wrote a great column about this a week ago when Chris Jones did sign, just to talk about, this is something with the Chiefs doing this that has not been in lockstep with what they normally do. I mean, a lot of times they've walked away from really good players in the past, but you can understand this one because of what Chris Jones does for that defense. If we're completely honest with ourselves, you know, George Karlaftis had a great year, but part of the reason he has a great year is because Chris Jones gets double-teamed and George Karlaftis gets single-teamed. Some of these guys coming off the edge with blitzes, whether it's Trent McDuffie or Legarius Sneed, they're really successful doing that. They're really good at doing that, but why are they good at that? Well, they pick on the side that is not Chris Jones's side, where he's taking a double team on the other side. They get locked up one on one. So a lot of what the Chiefs do defensively as a team that's successful is because Chris Jones is successful and because he takes so much attention. So for the Chiefs, they really didn't have an heir apparent to that position, and they didn't have a guy who could do so many things in that particular role. So they're banking on him to be as motivated here in the next 3 years as he certainly seemed to be last year for the Chiefs. And it still is a risk. It's a risk of him being ages 30, 31, 32. But at this point in the Chiefs operation, and along with them going for the three-peat, they decided this cost was worth it, and they decided that they were going to trust that he's going to be as good as he was these past couple years. So we'll see if that pays off for them. There's no guarantee, but they locked him as part of the future, and because of that, they're going to have to make other financial decisions down the line.
Plus, I couldn't imagine him in a Chicago Bears uniform. So there's that. Let's talk about the other big defensive piece that's in the news right now, and that's L'Jarius Sneed. The Chiefs put the franchise tag on Sneed. What is that? $19.8 million. Is that where it is for his position? And where do things stand right now with L'Jarius Sneed? And then, what's your prediction on what's going to happen with L'Jarius?
Yeah, so the Chiefs are in an interesting spot here because we talked to Brad Beach of the Combine about potentially putting a franchise tag on either Chris Jones or L'Jarius Sneed, and he said that he hinted that it was going to be Sneed. I'm not sure the Chiefs would have done that if the salary cap did not jump the way it did this year, which gave them more flexibility. The problem with putting the franchise tag on somebody is you have to lock those dollars in for that player. You don't have that money to go spend in free agency. You have to kind of reserve it, something like putting it in escrow or something. You have to reserve that money in the offseason. You can't go spend it on free agents because what if that player plays for you under the tag? You have to have that money available for them. The Chiefs, when the salary cap went up, I think they felt comfortable doing that while also thinking in their mind, potentially there's an opportunity here to franchise tag him and trade him somewhere else. So if the Chiefs thought maybe they could get a second-round pick for him from some other team, the other team could negotiate with L'Jarius Sneed, which he had permission to do, go other teams and try to negotiate a long-term contract, then the Chiefs could not only clear that $19 million off the books, they could get some draft compensation, and then we know what they've done with cornerbacks here recently. They usually move their guys up, and they become really good players. And last year, they had good depth with Joshua Williams, with Jalen Watson, and also Nazi Johnson, who went out in the preseason in training camp with a knee injury. You got to feel good about those guys coming back. So the Chiefs would miss L'Jarius Sneed, but at the same time, they have capable guys you think could step up into bigger roles if they potentially traded him. Where it seems like it's at this point with L'Jarius is he's asking for a contract from his new team that is sort of resetting the market for cornerbacks. They're going to be one of the richest paid cornerbacks out there. And so for other teams to potentially trade for him, not only are you asking to give away a pick, you're saying, wait a minute, is he worth the top of the cornerback market money to have him at age 27? Or all of a sudden does this equation sort of fall apart? So I'm a little bit surprised he's asked for that much. If we remember back, Blair, L'Jarius did not participate really much at all in training camp last year because of a knee injury. Now, he missed no games in the regular season or the postseason with that knee injury, but it's still a concern to have. I mean, it's something if you're locking a player up to that kind of money, it's something in the back of your mind. Is this thing going to pop up again and potentially be part of the investment you make and not get the return on investment because he has this history? So it's a little bit of a game of chicken, it seems like, right now. And again, we talk about the three-peat. If there is no team out there that's just willing to make him a huge deal, L'Jarius could get in the situation that Chris Jones was in last year, where you basically just say, forget it. I'll take my $19 million. I'll play with the Chiefs. I'll chase a three-peat. I'll be with the locker room and these players that I like. I'll still get a big payday. And then if I do what I think I'm going to do this year, I'll get a huge contract next year anyway. And so the Chiefs, again, they're reserving that money, and that's potentially what's going to happen here. So based off the buzz here, I don't think it's out of the question he gets traded still if they can find some compensation there with the long-term deal he wants. But if that's not what he's solely motivated to do, and if he potentially still wants to be a Chief, then you could be looking at kind of a Chris Jones-like situation this year. A little bit different because Jones was on last year. It was a normal deal last year. This would be L'Jarius Sneed on a franchise tag. But still, kind of both guys playing out the last year of their contract, kind of betting on themselves to play at the same level. And if that happens, they'll still get paid while still potentially having a chance to win the Super Bowl with the Chiefs. This would be a big one. This would be a three-peat. And so it's looking more likely by the day that L'Jarius Sneed potentially could be a Chief next year and kind of playing on a one-year deal.
And that's not a bad scenario for the Chiefs to get L'Jarius back. He made the you know, the defensive play of the postseason, as far as I'm concerned, with the pass breakup, the fumble, forced fumble of Zay Flowers going into the end zone in the AFC Championship game, and what was the stat on him during the regular season? He didn't allow a touchdown pass to wide receiver that he was covering. But not all the metrics are friendly toward Legarius, it seems to me. You're very much an analytics guy. What is it about the metrics that don't love Legarius?
Well, it depends on the metrics. NFL Next Gen Stats, what you were referring to, Blair, and they love him. I mean, like you said, the closest man in zone coverage. He allowed no touchdowns all year. Average separation, he's ranked really high. Pro Football Focus has not loved him as much. I think a lot of that is the penalties. And we've heard the Chiefs sort of reference this a lot with Legarius, is they don't really mind that much. They think it's sort of the price of doing business for him to play the way that he plays. And there is a human side to this, because if you remember back to the Miami Dolphins game in the playoffs, I mean, what did it mean to the Chiefs when Legarius Sneed jammed Tyreek Hill at the line of scrimmage and put him flat on his butt? You know what I mean? And the whole sideline erupts. Everybody's going nuts. It's 30 below zero, so it's not a game where really guys would naturally go nuts. But again, I wonder for a team that wants to be based on man coverage, on physicality, how much of a boost that is. And so it also kind of leads me to the equation of, like, for the Chiefs, is he worth more to them than other teams because they don't mind his weaknesses as much and they love his strengths and they know what he is and they would know his knee injury better than anybody else? Or if you're a team, I mean, again, we've heard the Colts rumor so much, how much would it mean to have a physical presence to trade for, to kind of set the mentality for your defense to be more physical or to have that sort of mindset? So I'm kind of torn when it comes to that. I think the Chiefs love him. I think they love the fit he has. I think him being able to trail the number one receiver across the line of scrimmage makes Trent McDuffie way more dangerous because he can play in the slot. He can blitz out of that. Again, it makes the Chiefs more versatile as a whole. I think if the Chiefs just could sign up for a one-year deal for Legarius Sneed, that $19 million is probably about right, and they would be fine with that. The question I have is kind of, does it limit your other options and what you can do with that money? Later on in the summer here, the Chiefs are going to have the opportunity to extend some of their players, like a Creed Humphrey, a Trey Smith, a Nick Bolton, those sorts of guys. How much money is left in the reserve to be able to do those sorts of things? Again, I think we get to every moment in the offseason and fans are like, well, you got to sign Chris Jones and you got to keep Legarius Sneed and then you got to lock up Creed Humphrey. And there's just a certain point where the money runs out. And so might the Chiefs be able or have to sacrifice a little bit long term or filling in certain pieces or maybe not signing the type of Drew Tranquils or Mike Edwards at the end of free agency like they did last year if Sneed stays on the roster? That's the potential. But again, are the Chiefs going to complain about having him for another year? I don't think so. It just might. They seem to have internal candidates who could step up. We might just not see that if Legarius Sneed is back there. It'd be kind of Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Nazi Johnson going back. Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Nazi Johnson going back to their original roles where potentially they might be ready for a bigger step up. If Sneed's back, then the Chiefs love Sneed, and you'll see the same type of similar defensive physical style with the Chiefs that you saw a year ago.
Chiefs have done so well in the draft at that position, including Legarius, and especially Legarius Sneed, a former fourth-round pick. So you're right. There's just terrific depth in the secondary, and especially at cornerback. Well, both safety and cornerback. So, okay, let's spend a little bit of time talking about the other big acquisition, and that is Hollywood Brown. What a deal it seems the Chiefs got. For Hollywood Brown, a one-year contract worth $7 million. Incentives can take it up to $11 million, but the Chiefs address probably their biggest need of the regular season with a talented wide receiver, a wide receiver whose upside is, you know, a 70, 75-yard reception season with over 1,000 yards and I say upside is his best season. That is, he's been over 1,000 yards. And when Hollywood Brown has had good quarterbacks throwing to him, like Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson, he's performed. So this seemed like a rich get richer type of acquisition for the Chiefs.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of the Juju deal a couple years ago, the 1 year deal, the prove it deal. The player joining a team that's successful with a good quarterback who thinks, hey, if this year goes well for me, I could potentially get a ring and then go get another contract the next year with somebody else who's willing to pay me. It's exactly what happened with Juju. And I think Hollywood Brown probably has more upside at this point, even though they're similar ages. Juju's body kind of aged a little bit quicker than maybe some of his counterparts. I know, excuse me, that Hollywood has had some injury issues too. But this is the advantage of the Chiefs being the Chiefs. I mean, let's just be honest. You know, I asked Hollywood Brown on this Zoom call we had with him. He talked about he came from nothing and that any money he has, he's fortunate to have, but he wants to win. And I said, were the Chiefs the best offer you had? Or did you turn down some money to be able to play with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes? And he said, there were other contracts out there, basically. So I'm led to believe that he turned down money or years to play with the Chiefs to kind of bank on himself. But based off of what other receivers were getting in terms of multiple years and in terms of dollar value, this seems like a steal. And again, we don't know if he'll stay healthy. Maybe it'll be a tougher fit. Again, we know receivers take some time to get used to Patrick Mahomes and what he does and how he likes his receivers to run routes. But based off of what the Darnell Mooney's got and what the Curtis Samuel's got, I don't think you can say anything but the Chiefs got the best deal, the best bargain of free agency so far as the wide receivers go. I mean, some of the contract expectations out there, I know Pro Football Focus had the expectation for Hollywood Brown to sign a one-year, $12 million guaranteed deal, and he signed for one for seven, upside to 11. I mean, very, very few receivers make it to free agency. It's just so tough. The teams lock up their own. If you're good, you sign with your team. So it's very difficult to plug the kind of hole the Chiefs did in free agency like they did with Hollywood Brown. So, again, on paper, this is an A++ signing. It seems like Hollywood Brown wants to play for a winner. And he played for Baltimore, like you said, with a run-first offense. He played with Arizona, which was not an effective offense. It seems like he wants to win. He wants to play with Patrick Mahomes. So the Chiefs leveraged that to their advantage. Seems like they got a deal in free agency. And you certainly could see him, if nothing else, taking away that or taking that MVS role where he can be a field stretcher and open things underneath more for the Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice types. But there's more upside there, only at 26 potentially, for to see with him more than we've seen from him in other years with worse quarterbacks than what Patrick Mahomes is. So really impressed by the signing. And again, I think the Chiefs right now leveraging the fact that they are the Chiefs. They're the two-time Super Bowl champions. Players might want to play for you at a lesser cost to try to build their value and go win rings. And it sure seems like that's kind of the headspace that Hollywood Brown is in at this particular moment.
Do you think that his signing changes anything about the Chiefs' approach to the draft? I think almost every mock that I've seen has the Chiefs taking a wide receiver. Does that continue to be a position of need?
Yes, but I think it allows them flexibility because we've seen the Chiefs do so well with not painting themselves in the corner, not having to do something. Like if the whole league knows you need a receiver and 12 receivers go off the board in the first round in the NFL draft, what do? You know what I mean? Right now, to me, their biggest needs are offensive tackle, somebody to compete with Wanye Morris, and wide receiver. And so both those positions seem particularly deep in this year's draft based off of the draft buzz that's out there. But now you don't have to reach one of them. Now if things go off the rails, and again, 11 or 12 receivers are going to take in, probably not that many, but something crazy happens, you look around, you go, well, there's the third best tackle on the board. And this third best tackle would have been a top 10 pick last year, but now he's the 32nd pick because so many other positions were taken. So I think if you're the Chiefs, you like the flexibility it allows you. So now you're going in the draft saying, hey, we have these specific needs. Everybody kind of knows that those two positions, potentially defensive interior, is still something that they could look at, or defensive line. But that way you're just not in a position where you have to do something just to do it. And so for the Chiefs, I think that leaves them in a very enviable spot here to be able at the first round to see what falls to them in those two positions that seem to be deep. And if there's a good offensive tackle, you take him. If there's a good receiver, you take him. And you don't look back, and then your second round pick can fill the other one. So for the Chiefs, definitely need another receiver, whether it's free agency or rookie. I think this allows you a little bit more leeway to creatively fill this and not feel like you're just desperate to do something to do it. And that's sort of what leaves franchises in a bind when that sort of thing happens.
Let's talk about a couple of other new acquisitions. The tight end room is being joined by Irv Smith, who was with the Cincinnati Bengals. Number three tight end right now behind Noah Gray?
Yeah, absolutely. And he signed for just above the vet minimum for the Chiefs. I think this probably brings an end for Blake Bell for the Chiefs. Again, unless something happens unforeseen here, it sure seems like Smith, with the signing he had and with what the Chiefs have coming back, that he fills in that third tight end role. We know Andy Reid loves his tight ends. He does, and he loves playing we talk about the 12 or the 13 personnel, the two tight end looks, the three tight end looks. The Chiefs use that so well during the playoffs to be able to get defenses manipulated in a certain way and then either run or pass based off the look they were getting. But I think Irv Smith just offers a little bit more athleticism and upside when it comes to that particular position. And we talk about the Chiefs needing a receiver. I mean, one way to work around not having receivers was what the Chiefs did last year, is that they put less of them on the field. And so Andy Reid is an offensive line tight end guy at heart. We know that. And I think the Chiefs, about as creatively as anybody, use those guys and scheme those guys open and scheme those guys up in ways that maybe the rest of the NFL doesn't. So it seems to me like this is sort of a low-risk flyer on him. And we'll see how well he blocks. He hasn't been always great at the best when it comes to Pro Football Focus. He's also battled injuries as well throughout his career and said this offseason is the first in the last three that he's not been working through an injury to come back from that. So kind of a low-risk, potentially high-reward guy for the Chiefs, but still slots into that tight end number three spot. I still think, obviously, Kelce at the top. Noah Gray has shown a lot with the Chiefs. But if he does well and can block well and can show some versatility in the pass game, especially in the red zone, then there's a role for him. We've seen that with Jody Fortson, and we've seen that with Blake Bell. There's a role for Irv Smith Jr. to be able to contribute and do some nice things for the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are just sort of banking on some upside and potentially, like we've seen from other guys in the past, a guy that Brett Veach has had his eye on before, maybe doesn't work out the first wave or through the draft, but he goes back and moves back and gets those guys. And Irv Smith is kind of the latest project the Chiefs are taking on.
You mentioned Jody Fortson. He's one of those guys that you just you wish he could have stayed healthy. But when he was a talented guy. And now he's, with the Miami Dolphins, I believe. And good luck to Jody Fortson. Hey, another newcomer here, the little under the radar. And talk about, you mentioned earlier the salary cap's up to $255 million. It took a $30 million jump this year to go to $255. And just to prove that every dollar counts, the Chiefs went out and signed Matt Areza, the punter, because Tommy Townsend was going to cost him, a couple million, $3 million. What, he signed two years for six? Yeah, with the Houston Texans. So they save a little bit by signing Matt Areza, who came into the league under some controversial situation, but has been cleared of all of that. And I think the Chiefs have a good one in him. The question, I think, with any punter, with the Chiefs, is you just assume he can do the things that it takes to be an NFL punter. Can he hold for place kicks? How are his holding skills for James Winchester and for kicker Harrison Butker?
Yeah, we'll get to find that out. I mean, word was in Bill's camp that he was doing pretty well with that, and not to understate that part of this, Blair, but 2 years ago, we were having serious stories about Tommy Townsend not being able to hold. You know what I mean?
Right.
And like, that was a big controversy with the Chiefs. And then last year he was like perfect, including the Super Bowl where he took the longest field goal in Super Bowl history and got that high snap from James Winchester down and got it low enough so that Harrison Butker could put it through. So, again, I'm not understating the point of holding. It's just sort of a matter of, for the Chiefs, they had a guy who had very major struggles with it, apparent struggles where even Dustin Colquitt was, going out and talking about it, a former Chiefs punter, and that swung all the way to, not talking about it the next year. So you hope if you're the Chiefs, that is a skill that, what I'm trying to say, is a skill that can be learned, a skill that can be worked on, a skill that from 1 year to the next you can go from this is a major concern to we are not even addressing this anymore because Tommy Townsend worked on it and worked on it and it became not a thing anymore. So obviously Areza can punt the heck out of it. We know kind of got the nickname punt god in college because of the 70 and 80 yard punts that he had. We'll see I'll be interested too on the directional stuff. Can you pin him inside the 20? Can you do the coffin corner? Can you help fill position that way. Obviously, Tommy Townsend was very good with those situational type things as well. But you're right. I mean, if you're the Chiefs and now you have Patrick Mahomes on the books as one of the top paid quarterbacks in the league on an annual basis, and Chris Jones on the books, and then, you know, you can go down the line, Jawan Taylor, potentially Legarius Sneed. This is starting to be a very top-heavy roster when it comes to salary cap dollars, and so they don't have the luxury of getting nostalgic about their punter, and it'll be sort of an interesting conversation to see next year when Harrison Butker comes up, because we saw some of these kickers getting $6 million right. a year, and if you remember back, the only reason the Chiefs have Harrison Butker is because they had a guy come back for the job the previous year, and then Harrison Butker got cut, and they said, we like this guy. Let's try him and see what he does, and so... Again, there's reasons. There are many, many reasons to be nostalgic about Harrison Butker. But push comes to shove, I mean, are they going to pay $7 million for a kicker on a roster that's already having to make very difficult decisions about other players? I don't know that answer. So this will be interesting to track for the Chiefs. They might have to be a team that continually cycles those specialists for sure, just because of the roster situation that they have.
Yeah, a little piece of history to refer to, maybe the. Adam Vinatieri left the Patriots after being considered the, you know, the greatest clutch kicker in NFL with his game winning Super Bowl kicks. And of course the Patriots, went with, was it Goskowski after that? And he continued the tradition of Patriots kicking. So yeah, it just may be a hard business decision when it comes to Harrison Butker, who's been, you know, just terrific for the Chiefs, throughout his career, but especially, in 2023 and then the postseason. He was fantastic. Okay, let's just quickly go through some of the other players that the Chiefs have signed, mostly on the defensive side, right? The three-year deal for Drew Tranquil, I thought, was well-deserved, and it coincided with Willie Gay leaving for the New Orleans Saints. Also signed Tershawn Turk Wharton, Deion Bush, Mike Pinnell, Derek Nnadi, James Winchester. So Chiefs got work done. They were busy. They got some work done in the early weeks of early days of free agency. We mentioned the departure of Willie Gay. The other notable departure is, as you mentioned earlier, is MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And two signings that need to be identified as significant as well, defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo and special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Dave Tobe. So what's left for the Chiefs? We still some former Chiefs, I guess you can call them. They're out there in free agency. They're not former Chiefs until they sign somewhere else, but there's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, there's Mike Dana. There are players out there that that have some decisions to make.
Yeah, I think it's been fascinating to watch the defense, what they've done this offseason compared to the offense. Because you just mentioned it, Blair, like, they're running it back, you know?
On like, that side, everybody but Willie Gay, right?
I mean, everybody but Willie Gay, but it's like, especially defensive line, like, Turk Wharton, Mike Pinnell.
Nnadi.
Derek Nnadi. I mean, they know their guys, and they like their guys, and they said, we want all those guys. We do not want to disrupt this sort of thing. I think it's hard to know exactly without being in that room with the Chiefs and knowing sort of how they envision these dollars to be spent. You know, even Brett Veach talks at the Combine about how they have contingency plans based off of, if Chris Jones resigns, then they have this contingency plan. If he doesn't, then they have all these dollars, and so they have this contingency plan. It makes me wonder how many dollars are available left. You know what I mean? Because you have to fill out a roster. I mean, you can sign now the rest of the guys to vet minimums. You have to have that money available to basically fill out the rest of your roster. But, like, what flexibility do the Chiefs have at this point, especially if you're kind of trying to envision what extensions they're going to do this season with certain guys, and if how much money they need to potentially do those things that they want to do later this offseason. So, I mean, the thing about Mike Dana is I thought he'd be gone by now. I mean, I figured his versatility, what he showed in the playoffs, I figured a team kind of like Colin Saunders last year. Saints jumped on him pretty quickly. He was signed. The more he waits and the more he doesn't sign, I mean, the Chiefs brought back every other defensive lineman. If there's an affordable deal, why would you not bring him back? Again, if it's part of the budget. So that's the main thing I would say. I already mentioned offensive tackle. The Chiefs have to get another left tackle. I do not foresee them going next year with Wanye Moore as the starter and no other option available. They could go the Donovan Smith type route. Probably not Donovan Smith. Maybe so. I don't know. He didn't have a great year for them last year. They kind of worked around him. But whether they sign a free agent or draft a guy high in the draft, it seems like they need competition. And Brett Veach said as much at the combine that they need somebody there. Another running back, you talked about it. Maybe, and this is supposed to be a really not very good draft for running backs, but could the Chiefs take a late round flyer on somebody? Right now, they only have Isaiah Pacheco under contract. It seems like there's a lot of running backs always available out there, so it's not one that you are desperately needing to fill, but maybe Derek Prince just comes up and they like him. I don't know. We'll see. And then maybe the most fascinating one, just on a weird scale, is backup quarterback. I don't know that Blaine Gabbert will be back. And Brett Veach at the combine kind of went off on a little tangent when he was talking to us, kind of unprompted, about the Chiefs potentially wanting a guy who could run a quarterback sneak in these short yardage situations. And so I don't know. I mean, could it be a smokescreen? It could be. But for him to bring it up unprompted, it makes me think that these are things that have kind of bounced around the coaches' minds, that they just have decided that Patrick Mahomes will never be able to. I mean, when we were talking at the Super Bowl in the press box, fourth and one in the Super Bowl, it's like, it's got to be a quarterback sneak. Here's the moment for it. You lose the game if you don't get it, and they still didn't run it. If that's the case, maybe they're looking for a mobile quarterback. Maybe they could draft one. Maybe they can get a guy in there that helps them in those short yardage situations that they don't have at this particular moment. But that's at least one to track. You know, I was even sort of interested. We haven't heard any rumors on this regard, especially since Justin Fields already got traded. But, I mean, if he costs like a sixth-round pick for the Chiefs, he'd be a decent quarterback sneak guy, right? Probably. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Weird things have happened. But I will be interested to track that. I don't know that Blaine Gabbert back with the Chiefs. And if they really are interested in having a quarterback sneak type quarterback, then I don't think Blaine Gabbert fits that particular role. So they might be looking either in the draft or in free agency for somebody who might fit that role a little bit better.
Well, we always thought it was going to be Blake Bell, right? who quarterback in college, but never seemed to be able to pick up the first down in those positions with the Chiefs. So, all right, Jesse, that's great stuff. Appreciate you spending some time with us, and we will talk again soon. That'll do it for this episode. Thanks to producer Randy Mason for putting together the show, and to our SportsBeat KC staff of Monty Davis, Jeff Rosen, and Scott Chasen. Tip of the cap to Jesse Newell for sharing his insights. The best digital sports page going is the Morning Sports Edition. Every day, coverage of the Chiefs, the Royals at spring training, March Madness, local and national coverage, it's all there. Go to liveedition.kansascity.com to check it out for yourself. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you thought of the show with a rating and review. And we'll be back soon with another SportsBeat KC, where we talk sports in and around Kansas City.